Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the third session now this afternoon in the parallel sessions here in the Asia Room. I would like you to join me, if you would, in welcoming Nicole Rosen, who is an associate professor from the University. Oh, sorry.
I wish.
In Australia.
I know I look old, but
no, it's okay. I'm just speaking Australian. an assistant professor. From the University of Lethbridge in Alberta, Canada. And she's talking today on the topic you can see in front of you.
I need to stand here, I guess, to be able to settle with this, or can I move this?
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. Drag the mouse. Oh, you need to keep looking.
Okay, that's fine. I just don't want to stand in front of the light. I'm going to be talking about Revitalization Dictionary project that I'm working on right now. Unfortunately, my co-presenter and co-author, Heather Suter, wasn't able to come. She would have liked to, but was too run down with all the work that she's been doing, I guess, and couldn't manage to travel all this way. In sort of general terms, I just want to talk about the Métis language community for a while, and just the fact that it's actually hard to even define a community when you're talking about the Métis people. So because culturally they were a multilingual group. And unfortunately they're living, or we're all living in North America in a really what's essentially a unilingual society. I mean, each person has their own language, and that's what defines them. I think what's happened is that because a lot of the Métis people now are in this society, it's become a divisive element in that where they used to be multilingual, people now speak different languages, but because they're trying to live within the society and with funding bodies and things like that, that see things in a unilingual kind of setting, it causes some problems within the community and that are not necessarily always seen elsewhere. It's unfortunately, sadly, what could be what language usually can be used as a unifying element of culture, it often isn't. It is for the people who speak the same language, but it's sometimes in the Métis community dividing a larger community into smaller factions, which is unfortunate and sort of not really in anybody's best interest. I was really reassured to see that other people have got questions without answers, because when I wrote this abstract, one of the comments was, "I really hope we hope there'll be more solutions and things like that," and that they were looking for more information on the solutions that I was going to provide. And I'm glad to come here and realize I don't actually have to provide an actual definitive solution. But I'm going to sort of be looking into what we're hoping is going to help, and unfortunately, sort of retrofitting solutions, I guess, but we'll try anyway. Okay, so I'll talk a little bit about the background. In Canada, we don't usually have to talk about the Métis people, but since we're far away, not everyone knows who they are. Essentially, they're a nation that was born from French voyageurs, settlers that came through Canada and married First Nations women and had children, and their children, and a lot of them ended up speaking this mixed language that was half Cree and half French, essentially. I'll get into the languages they speak a little bit later, but that was one of the things. So those are the Métis people, and they really are a new identity. The word Métis in French just means mixed, if you go anywhere else other than Canada, it really just Métis in French is just mixed. But in Canada, it's an actual real group. Unfortunately, if you don't know Canada, it's not going to help this much that well. This is above North Dakota, for anyone but that might help. And that's the area that they're kind of born in. So I'm going to show, there'll be a map of all of Canada later. And anyway, this is just where the settlements were originally, where they started out. Okay. Okay, so multilingualism really was just a traditional aspect of Métis identity. The Métis people were interpreters. They were basically the go-betweens, because if you had, in the fur trade, if you spoke Cree, you could get a better, but didn't speak French, you could get a better price for your furs if you had somebody to go in between you who could actually negotiate, right? Otherwise, you can't speak to the people, you can't get what you want. And so they were really in a good position. They were bicultural and bilingual, at least bilingual. And so they had a good spot. A lot of them were somewhat educated, in sort of French or Western ways, but also still kept the First Nations background. So they really had a good position for a while there. I mean, now it's really not the case, but to begin with, they really were in a privileged position. They were just well known as being apt linguists. Right? Most of them spoke at least two languages, French and Cree. Many quickly added other Indian tongues and English. And this is just a little section about their own patois, still spoken by them throughout the West, is a mixture of French and Cree or Chippewa with some English words. That was in 52. Okay. So unfortunately, the Golden Age, I guess, was a kind of came to an end. Really, in the 1870s, after the Red River Rebellion, in 1885, after the Battle of Batoche, so what happened is that the Métis were forced out of where they started from. I guess I shouldn't say homeland. I mean, homeland now, they talk about the whole area. But they were forced west. So this is where I can see. This is where everything started, around Winnipeg. And then they got sent out because other people didn't like them around. Then they end up here, sort of, after 1885, they got pushed even further west, and so now they're dispersed all over the place. And this is going to come into play later, too, because part of the problem is the geography. If you've got a community of people that all live within the same area, that's one thing, but when you have people who live all across, you know, this is three provinces, and it's pretty big, all these different languages, I haven't really talked about the languages, but these are all the different languages that they had spoken. Okay, so it gives you an idea. There's the labels for them are a little bit maybe not so clear. There's French Cree, Soto, which is Ojibwe, Michif, Plains Cree, Swampy Cree, Brett, and Bungie, and these are languages that don't exist anymore, but and I'm not going to talk about them or anything. Okay. So after this dispersion, basically they're persecuted by everybody. This is why I say the Golden Years kind of ended up, and they were essentially just called half-breeds. They weren't First Nations and they weren't Europeans, so they had no status. They didn't have reserves. What happened a lot of the time is if they could live under white society, and if they looked white enough and they could speak French, then they just passed themselves off as I shouldn't say that way. But they would just decide to live a French life. And then what's happening now really more and more is that as Métis pride is sort of coming out, a lot of these people are coming out of the woodwork and they said, yeah, well, you know, my parents always told me I was French, but it turns out I wasn't French. I'm Métis, and they're trying to reclaim a lot of the heritage that they didn't, you know, they didn't even know about actually before. Okay, and so they've actually are now officially recognized as one of Canada's first peoples, or Aboriginal peoples. So in terms of the language situation, you really have to talk about Michif languages. You can't just talk about Michif or the Michif language. Unfortunately, this is going to be a bit of a problem because I'm going to be talking about Michif as a language. And you're going to see that there's a lot of problems with terminology. In general, a lot of the elders still today do speak a number of languages. They'll normally speak one or two Métis languages as well as English. This is the elders, though. So, you know, people who are sort of 60 and 70 and older. Most of the young Métis will speak only English now. Some will still speak French, and depending on what community they're in, maybe they'll speak another language. But most of them, it's English. As most people probably already know, a lot of the language transmission stopped as a result of the Indian residential schools. So the Métis were involved. The ones that were sort of a lot of those people who were put into these residential schools, that they didn't want their children to endure the same thing as they did. And this is a familiar story in Canada anyway. And so they just decided not to speak their language anymore because of all the hurt that it had caused them. And so what's happened now is that we have all these generations that don't speak it. Okay. So the Métis and Métchif, I should clarify, basically mean the same thing. Métchif is a French way of saying, or it's the Métis way of saying Métis, essentially. Métchif, hundreds of, you know, in French, Métif and Métis were coexisting words, and Métif just became Métchif because of phonological changes. So it's the same word, but a lot of people traditionally call themselves Métchif. And so it was in the same way as a Cree person speaks Cree and a Dene person speaks Dene, the Métchif person will say they speak Métchif. Now, the issue here really is terminological, because what happens is because these involve a lot of different languages, Métchif ends up referring to a number of different languages. Okay, so just because you say you speak Métchif doesn't mean you're speaking the same language as the person across the room who also says they speak Métchif. I mean, it's not a problem that people speak different languages, but it's terminology, and it can end up being a problem when with other bodies that are around you. Okay, so one of the languages would be what you'd characterize as a Métis dialect of French, spoken in Manitoba and Saskatchewan. If anyone speaks French. This is an example of a Métchif prayer in Métis French, and you can see if you speak some French, it, you know, a lot of it looks just like French. There are some, you know, reportedly, or there's Algonquian influences with possessive systems and things like that, but it's essentially, you know, French. Then there's this sort of Métis Cree. Bacher calls it a French Cree, which is a Métchif language that's spoken probably in northern Saskatchewan and northern Alberta. I don't know of any real in-depth study on it, but I'm told that it's Cree with a little bit, some French words here or there, and possibly some Soto is Ojibwe influence. Okay, and what I'm calling Métchif, is the language that I'm working on. It's described in Rhodes and Bacher and in my thesis. And it's normally characterized as being a mixed language. So this is what I was saying about having French and Cree together. So generally people say the noun phrase is from French and the verb phrase is from Cree. Obviously it's a lot more complex than that, but that's sort of the underlying description, or that's how people know of it. It's that weird language that does weird things. And I've just got a comparison of the three out of interest to see that they're fairly different. And I really apologize. I have a new Mac and I can't figure out the phonetic font. The C's are actually ch's. I'm copying sort of what an orthography. I didn't want to change it into a phonetics, really. I sort of copied into it. Or I just used the orthography that was in Bacher 97. So this is the French, and this is the Cree, and then if you sort of look at this, la petite fille, petit garçon, kind of matches the Métchif French. Wapameo kind of matches this here in Cree. So it's a mixture of the two. Okay. Very often the Métis people who speak to each other, they don't have a problem, right? They can adjust depending on who they're speaking with, and this was told to Peter Bacher when he was doing his field work, which would have been a while ago now, because even when it was published, it would have been a while ago before then. So this is probably about 30 years old, and just saying that the way you speak depends on who you're speaking with. We're all Métis. I think the important thing is they're all Métis, but they talk different, you know? And that's okay, right? Clearly for some people, it's okay that they speak differently. Now, the Métis identity today, they assert their own identity, that they've got a shared history, common culture, including song, dance, dress, national symbols, and a unique language. Now, I think what's important in this kind of thing is saying that they've got a unique language. They've got one language, which is Métchif with various regional dialects. I think as soon as you say this kind of thing, you're putting one language above the others. So one's a language and the other are dialects. And it's probably not meant to be that way, but the people who don't speak this Michif-Michif are now relegated to dialects. And you saw already that they're not actually dialects. Even if they were dialects, it wouldn't matter. But they're actually not dialects. They're separate languages. Okay. In terms of organizational structure, there are provincial political organizations in all the provinces from Ontario to BC. And within each province, they have locals, which are in the different communities that organize things. Okay, so when we're talking about language revitalization, we talk about the language community. Now, the problem we're having is to try to define that community. Who is the community that we're working with? Are we working specifically with the speakers of a particular language? Are we working with a Métis of a particular province? Speakers of a particular language of a particular province, or all Métis people. It's hard to know how to define the community. So the issue of multilingualism might actually be shared, but the actual language isn't always shared. Because we live in this society where unilingualism is the norm, even if it isn't the norm in the world, I think, you know, everyone here knows this, but that doesn't mean that anyone else that we know back where we come from knows this. It means that multilingualism is no longer the norm, and the Métis, I think these, you know, people themselves obviously have been affected by it, especially people who have gone through French schools and things like that. And, you know, enough people in general, it's hard enough with language attitudes that one's right and one's wrong. It's even harder when there's different languages too. Okay, so this one Michif-Michif has been given this sort of unique status, and it's been given the status sort of because for a couple of reasons. But I think one of the main things is it's because it's the only real true, the only language that really belongs to the Métis, and so. Cree also belongs to Cree people. French also belongs to French people. Soto belongs to Soto people. But this Michif language, the mixed language, is the only one that actually belongs to the Métis. And so they want to, you know, they obviously want to promote that one and be proud of that. And there's obviously you want to be proud of the language. The problem is the people who don't speak that language and whose ancestors never did speak that language. That it's a problem with those groups of people, and that's where when we go to the Michif language conference every year. There's one in 2 weeks, 2 weeks time or 3 weeks time, and it happens every single conference. You get the different groups, and people are all speaking Michif, and inevitably somebody gets upset because someone else says they're not really speaking Michif. And it's obviously just a question of understanding. I think it's partially understanding that multilingualism is okay, and terminology problems are okay. You can get over these kinds of things. Okay. Right. So, Michif was designated the national Métis language, be resolved that the Métis National Council recognize and declare Michif as a historical and official language of the Métis Nation. Okay. And like I said, this promotion of this language really does at least feel like the demotion of the others, okay, which is unfortunate. So the question, again, is when you're going back to revitalization, which language or which languages are we going to be working on? For the moment, what Métis National Council really has decided is that this Michif-Michif is the one that's most endangered. It's also the only one that you can't go to other communities and learn anything from. And so that's where they want to focus their interest. And that is what I'm doing as well. Now, of course, the community has to be involved and committed for revitalization to succeed. Everyone here knows that. We've got this problem, though, of people who are not behind it because it's not their language. We've also just got a geographical problem where people are spread out all over the place, and it's really just hard to get people close. There aren't any lands allotted to the Métis. There are no reserves, anything like that. And so there's no Métis there's a Métis territory that spans several provinces, not an actual area where you can sort of walk to and not talk to your neighbor. And so it's just a matter of trying to make this project work in a diverse community. And I know this isn't really new. Everyone has to make projects work in diverse communities. It's not all that new. I just think there's certain things that are different. So in terms of just sort of more really general solutions or approaches, we want a sort of we need to have more of a better understanding of even what we're dealing with. I mean, people haven't studied a lot of these different Métis languages, so there's been essentially no documentation work on a lot of them. I think one thing that's really important is really the promotion of all Métis languages. It doesn't matter whether it's the national language or not. If that's not what you speak, then you should be encouraged to promote the language that you speak or that your family spoke. And I think that one thing that's really important is trying to make people understand, especially politicians, that multilingualism actually is really an element of Métis culture, and that it's not, you don't have to promote just one language, okay? And but this is sort of, this has to go all the way up, you know, from grassroots all the way up to the politicians. And the way a lot of things work is how funding works, right? So if the top knows about the differences, then they can be allotting funding appropriately. So I know I'm going a little. Don't really have much time, if any time, but I do want to talk about my project, which is called Word Building in Michif, and we got a grant to research Michif morphosyntax and build this online dictionary, basically from a toolbox database. And it was really granted for this Michif language. Granted to. So last year, I went to one of these Michif conferences and was talking to people about the project. It was obvious that when I talking to the grassroots people that they wanted to have their languages as well involved. And so, I think. The decision was kind of made on the spot that we should be able to try and include this if we can include other languages or at least make it possible to include other languages, then this is good for the community. In doing that, I kind of went looking at the East Cree project, which you may or may not be familiar with. But it, basically, it's a dictionary. It's got text. It's all sorts of things. But what they do, they have different dialects available. So you can click on whatever area of the site you want to go to. If you want to hear something in the one dialect, you can go there. And if you want to hear something in a different dialect, you can go there. And so it's built right into the database that you can actually navigate the different dialects. And so it seems to me that this is a nice model that someone in my situation can kind of take, where you can actually just build the room into the database to include the different varieties. In my case, different languages, really. It's not there yet. I haven't done it, and I can't work on all the languages. I'm not professing to say I'm going to be building three dictionaries, but what I can do while I'm working on my dictionary is make sure that the infrastructure is there, so that other people, once they're working on the similar things, they can just sort of input things as well. Because the money is there for this, but it doesn't cost as much to once you've got the basics set up to bring other things into it. Also, because there's a lot of shared culture, at least learning objects can be used for different Métis languages. I mean, trapping and fishing and things like that, that's all Métis culture, and we can have visual objects and video and things like that in different languages. All right, anyway, so I'll have to stop there.
Nicole to take some questions, so we've only got 5 minutes remaining.
I think this is the last thing. Anyway, I was just, it's fine.
Pick through slides while you're firing.
That's okay.
I'm sure.
Sorry, I wasn't expecting the background to take so long. Yes.
Hi, I'm Federica Lupka from SOAS in London, and I felt like you were talking about the language I work with.
Oh, okay.
It has one name, and it's the language in Africa, but it's also, it doesn't have a community, you have villages scattered through a territory, different varieties that are not mutually intelligible, yet a common identity that is very much based on a shared profile of multilingualism, which is, of course, also very much in flux over time, and depending on specific social categories. And
so what are you doing?
I'm giving the same kind of talk that you give, I say, look, our paradigms are basically essentialist. When we talk about documentation, we talk about one language, we could distill, kind of homogeneous entity out of this. Because what I have to do in order to capture the knowledge underlying the linguistic system, I have to take the contact languages into account, just as you have to do. So already, where do I draw the line? You know,
yeah.
I cannot just look at it through the lens of borrowing and code switching. I really have, because they're far-reaching convergences. The other thing is maintenance virtualization has these essentializing ideologies as well, where you think if you are a fully fledged language, you have to have orthography, you have to have
mm-hmm.
reading materials, and all that, of course, endangers this diversity and creates all these diverse situations.
Right.
So I find that really unhelpful for me. So what I do, you know, there is an orthography I can't use because it privileges one dialect and the other varieties are not even described yet. So what do? Wide phonetic transcription of my documentation, make the documentation available
mm-hmm.
so that I do not create a standard,
mm-hmm.
you know, but leave my options open. And focus on oral materials that can be broadcast, you know, the radio broadcasts, because that actually favors diversity.
Yeah. I have to say, this has sort of started out as a dictionary project, but really it's going, what I want it to be more now, I think, is just a website with all sorts of materials, video, and yeah.
Really make the documentation usable, I think, is, you know,
yeah.
not rely too much on written,
mm-hmm.
which is always.
Yeah.
yeah.
I don't know who. Go ahead. Yeah, that is one of the things that we've been talking about. I mean, we're not very far along in the website itself yet, but that's one of the things that's come up fairly recently. This is looking into how to do that, definitely. I think it's a good idea. Thanks.
It's not quite on the topic of your project, but on the term Métis itself, it's my impression that there's other groups in Canada that are using the term Métis that people here might not know about it. And they're using it, I think, in the sense of, I haven't really looked at it too much.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's sort of a different political topic completely, but, well, it is actually part of the topic. There are Métis people in the East, essentially in the East, who actually are feeling left out even by this, because what's happened is that they've defined Métis as the people that started out in this Red River, that first map that I showed you at the beginning. They're defining that sort of area as the true Métis, and so all the people who were from further east are not part of that already. So, I mean, even within the problems here, there's more on a bigger scale, absolutely.
And it might not even involve French,
Yeah, I think it is more, well, yeah, I think you're right that it's mostly more mixed heritage. A lot of times it would be French, but I think because they don't... Yeah.
I think your talk and your situation is more than almost any that I've heard of yet. But highlights a problem that we have. We talk all the time about community and negotiating with the community and working with
yes,
the community.
Yes, yes.
But
yeah.
I've never been in a situation, whether it's from my own tribe, the Chickasaw, or the languages I work on in Sudan now, where there was
yeah.
really one community.
Yeah.
And generally, the presence of linguistic work sometimes causes conflict in the community and splits it on
yeah.
those issues. So I think this is maybe a question that we as a group of
yeah, I mean the community's needs. I mean,
yeah.
who? Which part of the community? Yeah, absolutely.
It's like asking what America wants.
Yeah. yes.
Any other questions? Going, gone. Well, if you could join me in thanking Nicole for her presentation. And we just ask you to make your way expeditiously to the next session.